October 16th, 17th, and 18th for two mega sales under one roof. The Quality Inn Hotel at 33 Benson Street is hosting its Zara-branded outerwear sale and mega sports sale featuring jackets, parkas, jerseys, hoodies, toques, and more just in time for those cooler temperatures. Students get a 10% discount on everything. Head out to the Quality Inn 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for great deals on outerwear and sports apparel.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's response to Via Rail's planned changes to train service in the city.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Via Rail, get your act together.
That was Councillor Brandon Tozzo at Tuesday night's City Council meeting following an eventful few weeks for rail travel in southeastern Ontario. In September, to accommodate the launch of a new nonstop express train between Toronto and Montreal, Via Rail announced it would be reducing the number of trains stopping in Kingston and other municipalities along the corridor. However, the company postponed the planned service reduction shortly after the announcement. This all comes after changes announced in March to Via Rail's earlier high-frequency rail proposal, which originally included establishing Kingston as a regional hub. These changes were also formally opposed by council. Mayor Brian Patterson brought a motion to council on Tuesday night aimed at not only securing Kingston's current level of rail service, but also improving it. The motion includes three key requests to Via Rail. The first two are that Via Rail commit to maintaining existing passenger rail service levels in Kingston and commit to a forward-thinking plan for enhanced passenger rail service in Kingston, including upgrades to the existing station and predictable, improved service into and out of Kingston. Mayor Patterson elaborated on the reasoning behind the motion.
The purpose of this motion is twofold. Number one, I think it's important that we continue to work to preserve the level of service we have. And so to be clear, Via has made it as intending to still move ahead with these changes, just not at this point. So I don't think that we can shrink back and be complacent about this. But the second piece is that even with the status quo, I don't think that we should be satisfied with that status quo. And I think we've had those discussions around this table. I've heard many of you talk with the same passion and sometimes frustration that I have on this issue, because I see so much potential for what rail service could be to and from Kingston. I feel like there's a failure of imagination, a failure of an ambitious vision for rail service that I think would very much have the potential to transform a lot of travel through Eastern Ontario.
The motion is topped off with an action item, a request to investigate adding a late night train from Toronto.
And I think if we're talking about where we can improve service, let's start with a very tangible, practical example. I hear all of the time from people in this community about how they would love to take a train to Toronto to see a Jays game or a Leafs game or a show or even go to dinner or even a late meeting, and you simply cannot do that. The last train that departs back for Kingston, you have to be at the station by about 6 p.m. or shortly after. So one of the things that I think that there is tremendous opportunity for is a late evening train back from Toronto. So here's a great opportunity where we can grow Via's ridership, we can improve train travel. And so what we've agreed is that we will do our part in surveying the community and trying to get input about those who would be interested in late evening train.
Councillor Don Amos, who seconded the motion, didn't hold back his frustration with Via Rail's recent decisions.
At the end of the day, VIA needs to really evaluate their business model, because if you look at your fourth largest station and you decide to not provide more service there, how badly do they really want to be in the customer service business and moving people across the country?
The motion received unanimous support from council, and so did the feeling of confusion and exasperation over the company's shifting plans.
Like, what is VIA Rail thinking? I have no idea tomorrow. Like, I'm going to just open up the news and just be like, what is VIA Rail doing? Are they just bypassing Kingston? Are they shutting down service and going bankrupt? I think the chaos that this has brought onto the community cannot be understated, because people don't know what services we're going to get a week from now, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. Imagine what rail service could be in Eastern Ontario. We're living between three large cities, and it is becoming incredibly inefficient to take rail service. You know, I've had my frustrations in the past with VIA Rail. I cannot think of more of a time where I am more confused by the message an organization is setting out from a communications perspective to the community and to Eastern Ontario. I'm sorry I sound infuriated. This is one of those times where I'm actually really mad at a Crown Corporation, not the first time, but where I'm just like I have no prediction of what's going on in the future.
A copy of the motion has also been sent to other municipalities that will be impacted by service reductions along the Montreal-Toronto corridor, including Port Hope, Cobourg, Belleville, Napanee, Gananoque, Brockville, and Cornwall.
We do need allies in this, but I think that if we can join forces and have a collective voice on this issue, then we can finally shift the conversation from cutting service to where we can actually add and improve service.
Councillor Connie Glenn added she would be bringing the motion forward to the Ontario caucus to get other municipalities involved. For now, Kingston's rail future remains on the tracks, but uncertain, as council, commuters, and neighboring municipalities wait to see what VIA Rail's long-term plans have in store. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the Gananoque Affordable Housing Working Group's presentation to council.
Thank you, Jesse. The town of Gananoque's Affordable Housing Working Group has presented its 2025 housing strategy to council, outlining a series of recommendations to address growing concerns over affordability and availability of housing in the community. The working group that was formed in May 2024 following a motion from Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey was entrusted with developing an action plan to guide council's decisions around affordable and rent-geared-to-income housing. The group's findings presented this week highlight affordability and availability as the two most pressing housing issues facing local residents. According to a housing survey conducted last September, 69% of respondents identified affordability and availability as top concerns. Of the 182 residents who took part, 37% reported a gross household income under $30,000. Nearly half of respondents rent their homes, with many spending upwards of $1,700 a month on rent, while 12% indicated they were in temporary housing, staying with friends, or homeless. The report notes that Gananoque's older adult population is rising sharply, with over 400 more residents aged 55 and older expected in 2031, underscoring the need for more accessible and affordable housing options for seniors. At the same time, the town's reliance on seasonal industries such as accommodations and food services places additional strain on lower-income residents. To tackle these challenges, the working group is recommending that council identify underutilized or vacant municipal lots that could be offered for affordable housing development. There were a number of other proposed measures, including the creation of a dedicated affordable housing webpage, the creation of a new community involvement plan focused on affordable housing, and improving communication to residents about local homelessness and housing supports in public spaces across town. The group also emphasized the importance of coordination with the United Counties of Leeds and Grenville, which serves as the regional service manager for housing. As Gananoque's population ages and housing costs rise, the report stresses that proactive planning is essential to maintain the town's social and economic vitality. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGR reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, with an update on the status of the KFLNA Big Brothers Big Sisters services.
Thank you, Dinah. At the end of October, Big Brothers Big Sisters Canada will be ceasing operations in Kingston, Lennox, Frontenac, and Addington after more than 50 years of service in the area. But the organization says the region won't be left without mentoring services. After an email sent from BBBS last Friday was circulated on Kingston-based Reddit and Facebook pages, community members began mourning the loss and wondering what the impact of losing such a long-standing program will be. Later that weekend, after the post that had been shared garnered hundreds of comments, BBBS KFLNA posted in the Facebook group to provide some clarification on the situation, saying the initial post shared was lacking in detail. In short, the organization says the ceasing of operations does not spell the end of mentor/mentee programs in the area, with the Boys and Girls Club stepping in to fill the gap. BBBS say they're working with a number of providers to try to transition programs to remain active in the area, noting that another organization is ready to kick off its own mentor-mentee program in response to the closure. Representatives for the local Boys and Girls Club and Big Brothers Big Sisters did not provide comment and said that they are waiting on further direction from BBBS Canada.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LGR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story covering the possible creation of 50 new childcare slots in Prince Edward County and Lennox and Addington.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Prince Edward, Lennox, and Addington Social Services are still looking to create 49 childcare spaces by December 31st, 2026, as part of their expansion under the Canada-wide Early Learning and Childcare System. The group is looking to find an operator who can expand or open new childcare spaces in the area. The group are looking for applications before October 31st. The Canada-wide Early Learning and Childcare System gives families access to more affordable and high-quality childcare options, helps lower childcare fees for parents and guardians of children under the age of six, increases child care spaces, supports the child care workforce, and supports inclusive child care. As of March this year, the system has created about 39,500 new affordable child care spaces. This goes towards their goal of creating 86,000 spaces by the end of 2026. As of January 1st this year, the system capped fees at $22 per day, bringing the provincial average to $19 per day. By March 2026, the system is looking to lower that average to $10 per day. Families and individuals may be eligible for reduced fees if their licensed child care provider is enrolled in the system and charges more than $12 per day for child care, with the child being under the age of 6 or turns 6 years old and is enrolled in a licensed preschool, kindergarten, or family age group or a licensed home child care premises until June 30th. Costs can depend on a family's income and can be reduced by 50% for eligible children in system-enrolled programs. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFW and Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about a significant funding boost for hospice care in Northumberland County.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Coburg, Ontario. It was a remarkable fundraiser for hospice care in Northumberland County, as Ed's House raised over $70,000 for hospice-related programs. A few hundred people and some dogs walked, ran, or biked selected routes in Coburg on September 28th. Community Care Northumberland Executive Director Trish Baird spoke with me about the fundraising efforts.
Oh, it's just we're thrilled with the response from the people that were there and the donors that provided fundraising for it. $71,000 raised in, well, it's a lot of work. And so we're excited and happy that it was so successful.
Now, you had 220 participants, rather, and 60 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a lot of pooping and scooping, but that's a lot of participants. I mean, that seems like it was a very good event.
Yeah, and really, there's probably, that's probably low numbers as far as maybe they weren't there walking, but we had people out walking all over the place, all over the world. We had pictures come in from Switzerland, from France, of people with their Hike, Bike, Bark shirts on. So it was great. And the dogs, that was a record number of dogs. And honestly, it was pretty calm there at Victoria Park.
Now, were you surprised at the worldwide engagement, or did you know that going in?
Well, I think we knew some of our volunteers and staff were on vacation that really wanted to participate, but dates collided. So they received their sponsors and fundraisers, and still made sure everybody knew that they were hiking for the cause. So that was great.
Now, you had some pretty serious individuals there. Selena Forsyth, the top individual fundraiser, $10,650, and HG for hospice team, the top team at $7,325. I mean, what's that say to you when you have that level of engagement by one or two groups?
Yeah, you know, and we every year there seems to be a different team coming out that have been impacted by hospice services in some way. It might have been somebody, a family member that was staying at the residence, or a family member that was being looked after at home by our community team, and the impact they have. And because all of our services at hospice, part of our organization, are free of charge, people want to do kind of what they can to help support us and get the word out about hospice, because so many people think of it in a negative term. And we really encourage our fundraisers and our donors to talk about the positive experiences they've had at the end of life of their loved one. And this is one way where it's a wonderful day. There's lots of laughs and there's lots of great stories and joining in. But there's also, you know, the serious part of why we're here and why we're raising that money. So those teams, they really get behind the cause. And Selena has, as an individual, she's been on our top leaderboard for many years. She's a longtime hospice volunteer, longtime community care board member, and this has always been her dream to have a hospice residence in this area of the county. So she always cajoles her friends and family far and wide to support her in her walk. So she came and walked 2 kilometers, and I don't know if you know Selena, but that was a great feat for her to be able to do that on that day.
No, that's amazing and wonderful that you have such passionate individuals in the community, mm-hmm. really driving fundraising and ensuring that there is hospice care. Now, segueing into my next question, obviously some of the programs that this money will help.
As I mentioned earlier, hospice services, it's free of charge. And we have a great community team that are out in people's homes, helping people at the end of their life. And they sometimes, people don't know so much about the community team. So it'll help with our, when you've first been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, you can call our team and meet with somebody to help you kind of navigate that journey. What's it going to look like? What's available? How can I stay in my home? What if I want to go somewhere else at the end of my life? Or I might be, you know, it doesn't mean you might be around for many, many years, but this way you can connect with somebody. It's a phone call away, or they can be visiting with you in your home. And then if, you know, you're towards the end of your life, you end up being transitioned into our residence at Ed's house, it can support you while you're there. We have some wonderful grief and bereavement programs to help family and friends. So this money goes to help support all of that, because we are funded partially by the Ontario government through Ontario Health at Home, but that's only about 60% of our funding, 50 to 60. And so this helps with that other gap, so that we can be able to provide these services in the community and at Ed's house.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Start with Thursday, October 16th, a cool 13 degrees here in the city of Kingston, feeling closer to 11, dropping down to 4 overnight. About the same daytime high on Friday, October 17th, but it'll feel a little bit warmer. Real feel closer to about 16 degrees, dropping down to 10 overnight. Saturday, October 18th, the day of the Queen's homecoming football game. Daytime high of 16 degrees. It'll be cloudy with a 25% chance of precipitation, only dropping down to 13 overnight. Sunday, October 19th, daytime high of 19 degrees with a 83% chance of rain throughout the region, dropping down to 10 overnight, and then moving into the start of next week, Monday, October 20th, daytime high of 14, feeling closer to 10, 60% chance of rain, dropping down to 8 degrees overnight. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Berry Street, King Street West to Stewart is closed October 14th to 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. to accommodate ongoing construction projects. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation. Johnson Street at Victoria, closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. Kings Court Ave, concession to First Ave, closed October 10th to November 21st for gas main installation. Queen Street, Wellington and King, westbound lanes will be closed October 14th to 17th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for the installation of new services. Tivoli Avenue closed at Midland and Sierra until October 17th for the installation of new services. Wellington Street, Queen to Berwick is closed October 14th to 17th from 7 to 7 for the installation of new services. Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper. Expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and some road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury. Expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalk, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from local jazz musician Oscar Evans' latest work, Live at Hotel Wolf Island. The album is a live recording from a quartet performance featuring Jonathan Stewart on saxophone, Nick Kornelik on piano, Andy Love on drums, and Oscar Evans on upright bass. Recorded in front of a live audience in March 2025, the album is a stellar example of Oscar's musicianship as a band leader and upright bassist. Follow Oscar on Instagram at Oscar Mayfield Evans for upcoming releases and exciting performance announcements. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Live at Wolf Island by Oscar Evans on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called I Mean You with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Plugged In My Ears podcast. I'm Adam here with Kyle and Sam. We've got a lot to talk about today, gentlemen. We've got Connor McDavid signing. We got the Toronto Blue Jays. And then Jake Walman signing too. So let's dive into those Oilers signings because I feel like that's kind of the biggest news right now in hockey besides obviously opening night tonight. But Connor McDavid signs a 2-year contract with the Edmonton Oilers before the season starts. I mean, what are our thoughts on this? I remember we were talking about this a couple weeks back. And myself with expert insight, and my source close to the Oilers, said that they were going to sign him before the season started, and that's what happened. But are you guys surprised at all by the 2-year deal or the amount? Your thoughts, Sam?
I did not think that McDavid was this selfless. I thought he was going to ask for a bit more money. Granted, I will say you both called it. You both said he was going to sign a short-term contract. And that it would probably manifest itself like this. And I actually do like what he did. I think he's really trying to give Edmonton one last chance to win the Stanley Cup. That's the only reason why I could see him deciding not to take a full $17 million like he probably could have taken had he wanted to. But it's also a clear indication to the Oilers that if it doesn't work in the next 2 years, he's going to go somewhere else where it might work. And that is a reality that Edmonton is pushing to the side. But they have to deal with that this year more likely than next. If I were to put myself in the shoes of management over there, because I was looking at this earlier. Darnell Nurse's contract goes up in 2030. Evan Bouchard's in 2029. That's a lot of money to spend on guys who turn the puck over 24/7. If you lose a dude like McDavid and you haven't won the Stanley Cup in the next 2 years, your team is automatically relegated to San Jose level. That's really bad. Really bad. So they got to do something quick to win the Stanley Cup or else they're going to lose a chance to do so for the next 10 years.
Kyle, any thoughts?
Carney's got a lot on the table for negotiations. It looks like, you know, one of his deals has gone through. I don't know about the other one. There's some problems on that end, but this one went through. So he's pretty happy about that one. It's a major discount, I have to say. I mean, everyone was a bit surprised. Bit surprised with the number, I would say. I heard some fair criticisms, though, that, signed discount McDavid, then dumped the rest of the coal in the fire right away after signing Walman to a pretty pricey contract as well. So
yeah,
small savings to not really much savings. Still got goalie problems. But, no, I think it's a pretty big power move by McDavid. I mean, yeah, he could have taken $17 million and the team would have been not good at all for the next foreseeable future. But honestly, it makes sense for him to wait it out a bit, I think, because he can re-sign 2 years from now for probably what, 20?
Yeah.
Because of the cap.
Yeah, he'll probably increase. Get that to go so, up, yeah.
So he'll probably get, you could probably sign for 10 by 20, like $200 million. I could literally see something like that crazy.
Yeah, so something like something larger to beat Kaprizov's contract. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'll ask the question now. Does locking up McDavid make the Oilers cup favorites at this point? I mean, they were there last year and Florida's really beat up. So, I mean, is Edmonton now the favorite this year going in? Or do you guys think they can get it done within this 2 years that McDavid's given them?
I think Edmonton is the favorite, and as in my personal view, I know Power Ranking says that too, although that doesn't really mean too much. But I also don't really know of any team that's as well poised as Edmonton is roster wise. Edmonton's defensive core is maybe not elite, but it's pretty good, and their offensive core is pretty elite. So they're pretty solid. Like, I actually can't think of a single team that has a better roster combination than they do right now. The only team that does, and this is a crazy take, but maybe Dallas. And I don't know if that's true. I don't think Dallas is the same high-end talent. I just think they're really consistent across the board. But I don't think Dallas is going to do that great. And Edmonton already showed they can shut Dallas down. But it wasn't easy for them to do it.
Yeah. No.
I think Vegas is pretty scary.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, the thing about Vegas is they've got a lot of guys that I mean, whether or not they have real injuries, I don't know. They seem to show up on the IR sheet, but they've got, you know, Eichel or something. If he goes down with an injury, yeah, I think that they'd have potentially some issues. But right now, they're on paper, they look pretty darn good, I have to say.
Yeah. No, I think they're definitely one of my favorite teams to come out of the West at this point. I think getting McDavid signed is a huge, like, distraction avoidance. So I think that going into the season, the team's going to be focused. They know that McDavid's bought in for 2 more years. That's their leader, right? I'm looking at their roster, and aside from the fact that Zach Hyman will probably be coming back from injury, I don't know a few of these names on the set of their forwards. I feel like the first line right now is probably going to be Draisaitl, McDavid, and Trent Frederick on the right wing. Now, I'm not too familiar with Trent Frederick's game, but I do feel like that is kind of they're kind of weak at right wing. I mean, Trent Frederick, Matthew Savoy, David Tomasek, and Kasperi Kapanen are their right wingers right now. I don't know if this is the most deep team I've ever seen, but we've looked the last few, like Florida winning the cup the last 2 years, they've had to be deep teams. Both teams were super deep. And I don't know if Edmonton's got that in their forwards. I know, Sam, you talked about their defense, and like their defense, I think, is honestly one of the bright spots of this team. Their goaltending and their forward depth, I think that's kind of where they kind of fall off. I mean, even watching them last year, as soon as McDavid and Draisaitl were off the ice, I mean, it was kind of a totally different team. Like, you kind of could guess that the Oilers were not going to score when McDavid or Draisaitl were both off the ice at the same time. Like, it didn't look good. But I don't know. I think we'll be the season's a long season. There's going to be injuries. They signed or claimed Connor Ingram, I believe, off waivers. So they have a third option at goalie if Skinner and Pickard don't work out. I still think they need a goaltender to be the favorite. I think I don't like Stuart Skinner's game. I don't think he is the answer right now. But I don't say that he was to blame in the finals. I think that honestly Skinner played all right in the finals, but it will be interesting to see, I think. But Wallman getting locked up, I think, is honestly, I think that's a big win. I don't know. Do you guys think Wallman's a big win, or do you think that's kind of an overpay for the Oilers?
You know what? I think I have like mixed opinions on it. I don't know. His track record is interesting because he was almost like borderline chased out of Detroit. So not a great start there. He played pretty well in San Jose, all things considered.
Yeah, the team is on.
He played pretty well last season. I don't know about that. I mean, the contract, I think right now I feel iffy about it, but I think it's because they think it's going to age better. Yeah. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. I think I'm going to say it's not a safe contract. I'm going to say it's on the riskier end of things.
Okay.
But I'm not like super, I wouldn't say it's terrible or like really good, but it could basically go either way. Just like a high risk investment.
Yeah. 7 years is a long investment in Jake Wallman, in my view. I don't know if he'll be worth $7 million 7 years from now, even though the cap's still going up. Mm-hmm. Because this is a pretty big investment on a guy who's good, but not destined to stay good. So yeah, they're going to have to get rid of him before the 7 years is up if they want to be able to do something useful with him in the future. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. The way that I looked at it is like I don't mind Jake Wallman as a player, so I kind of like that the Oilers did lock him up this long. And I do think $7 million is pretty easy to move if it does come down to having to trade him 3 or 4 years down the line. The only red flag that I saw is comparing it to the Luke Hughes contract that was just signed last week, 7x9 for Luke Hughes, who has a lot more upside than Jake Wallman does. And that's, I mean, it's not obviously 7x9 is more than 7x7, but I still think that that's like setting the tone for a lot of these defenseman contracts. And the Wallman contract might not look too bad if he keeps up the play and the cap goes up, because the Luke Hughes contract seems to be affecting the Lane Hutson contract discussions right now, as Lane Hutson was prepared to take $9.5 million a couple weeks ago, but then Luke Hughes signed this 7x9 and is now looking for a little bit more, rightfully so. But I think that the fact that all of this is like happening right now with the Luke Hughes contract and the defensemen are like, okay, we're worth this value, I think the Wallman deal is pretty good compared to what they could have ended up overpaying. I think they could have ended up overpaying way more for Wallman than they ended up doing. So, opening night is tonight. We've got a couple games on the slate. I am looking forward to the Montreal-Toronto game tomorrow, but tonight there's right now Blackhawks-Panthers, Penguins-Rangers, and Avalanche-Kings. If you ask me, kind of an underwhelming opening night. I don't know about you guys. Any thoughts on this? I know like Florida obviously is supposed to be a lot better, but I mean, I wasn't too high on any of these games tonight.
No, it's not a big opening night. I think the real opening night is always actually Saturday.
Yeah.
Like Saturday is actually hockey night in Canada. So that's when the actual like unofficial opening night is, at least in my opinion, usually.
No, I know what you mean. There was a comment made by an analyst over at ESPN, I think last week, that was talking about how the NHL opening night is starting on like the same night as game three of the ALDS and NLDS for the MLB. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to be watching opening night hockey. And he's like one of the head analysts of like ESPN, and like ESPN covers hockey, ESPN covers baseball. So it's just kind of was an odd sight to see, I guess, but I mean, I don't really blame them. I feel like the lineups are not too great. Like Pittsburgh, a team that's like kind of projected to be a bottom team. The Rangers, a team that didn't make it last year. Chicago, a team that didn't make it last year, wasn't even close. Florida, like beat up team. And then Colorado, LA, I guess is the best game. But if you think I'm staying up till 10:30 to watch that, you're thinking wrong. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to the baseball tonight. I don't know. Are you guys tuning into the Jays Yankees tonight? It's a chance for the Jays to advance to the ALCS for the first time since 2015 when they did against the Kansas City Royals. I don't know. You guys tuning in?
Maybe, yeah. I don't have really good reception here, but I'll see.
Oh, yeah? Maybe you can listen on the radio.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone needs a lullaby, Kyle.
Yeah.
Right.
No, but the Jays have been cooking recently. I don't know if you guys saw their first two games against the Yankees, but they blew them out both times. Vlad Guerrero Jr. had the first grand slam in the postseason by a Blue Jays hitter. Kind of historical stuff going on right now in Toronto, but the series switches over to New York. So now they're playing at Yankee Stadium. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. Did either of you guys check out any of the first two games, or was it kind of just saw about it on the news? Or
yeah, no, I saw some of the like clips from it, but I didn't watch the full thing. Yeah,
one of my housemates, Josh, actually went to the game where the grand slam happened, and he said it was the loudest moment he's ever been a part of. I mean, we've talked about it before, but playoff baseball in Toronto is just completely different energy than any regular season baseball game you could go to. It's a really electric environment, especially when they're winning, but especially when they're hitting the ball really well. There's been a few Yankees fans that are saying that the Jays are cheating, actually. They're stealing signs, that they have but if you look at it, the Jays have a crazy home record. They're like 54-27 at home this year, and then like 40-41 on the road. So, which is kind of, it's not really concerning. I think the Yankees fans are trying to cope with getting blown out by the Blue Jays twice, but it is kind of interesting and funny to see the Yankees fans kind of struggling to identify what the issue is. But I mean, I don't know. People are thinking it's like another Houston Astros incident. But any thoughts on that?
All I'm going to say is me hearing the Yankees having trouble with accountability does not surprise me. They're suffering large issues with that across the board. So, you know, let's just say that's right in line with what I expected.
No, fair enough. Sam?
Yeah, I don't know if I can say much more than that either, although I will say that this tends to be a thing for American fans when Canadian teams do better.
Yeah.
There's always an excuse, and you know, you can't blame them. The United States is predicated upon a dream, and we're predicated upon a promise, and that is the promise to attain glory. For them, it's a dream, and sometimes it comes true. Yet for us, it's manifest destiny. So, I don't blame them for trying to come up with excuses, but unfortunately, the gods of baseball don't bow to excuses.
That's right. A good point, Sam.
Another contract that got signed was Philip Gustafson on Minnesota for $6.8 million, and man, honestly, seeing those kind of contracts, it kind of hurts when you're like a team looking for a goalie and you're seeing teams sign one for that cheap. But the only way to get a deal like that is if you have a good like system of acquiring rookie goalies. It seems is the only way to get a good goalie nowadays.
Yeah, and rookie goalies take a really long time to develop too. I think of Sebastian Casa, who's over in the Detroit Lions or Detroit Red Wings system, not Detroit Lions. He's in the Detroit Red Wings AHL program, and he was like one of the top highly touted goaltending prospects like 5 or 6 years ago, and he's maybe ready to start in the NHL this year. Like maybe starting to get some starts as a backup. Like a solid goaltender is a 5-6 year investment to properly develop them. And I mean, we look at teams like the Oilers that are struggling to get goalies, and like, have they ever really developed a goalie ever? Like since what, Grant Fuhr? Like I can't remember a time that Edmonton had like a homegrown drafted goalie.
I can't actually think of one really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Scrivens, was he like the last homegrown goalie in Edmonton?
Yeah. I think like, he actually was. That's crazy.
Like no, Scrivens was on the Leafs. He wasn't even
on the Leafs.
I think he was on the Leafs first. I can't remember. But like, I mean, you look at teams like, I mean, I don't want to toot my team's horn, but the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, if anything, they're like a powerhouse for developing goaltenders. I mean, Patrick Waugh, Carey Price, like Jose Theodore, won a Vezina with the Habs. Mm. So, I mean, like all guys that were drafted and developed, it's obviously not the same as it used to be. Goalies used to be thrusted kind of into the spotlight quicker, but now they have time to develop. So I think honestly, like if Edmonton could go back a couple of years and maybe draft like Filip Gustavsson, they could be looking completely different right now. Right. So
that's a good point. To be fair, though, I mean, how, you know, Montreal obviously is doing a better job developing goalies, but the fact that they were able to turn poo into gold with Samuel Montembeau is kind of an exception to the rule. Obviously, he wasn't drafted by Montreal, but they turned rubbish into something
I'll tell you a quick loophole on the goalie is just look for whatever Ottawa's trying to discard and pick it up, because I don't know what we do in Ottawa, but man, the number of good goalies that we've just shot out of there. And for nothing too. Like we're almost paying teams to take good goalies from us. I don't know why, but Filip Gustavsson came right from Ottawa system. So
yeah,
it's a strange one over there. But honestly, that's what I would be doing.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can't really see like who is a. They had a really good prospect, Merlinen or something. Levi Merlinen.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty good. Is he still on the Senators?
No.
No. Is he off of them? I don't
think so.
Because they've
either that or we've had at least like, yeah, we've had a handful of decent goalies pass through. I mean,
Merlinen's the backup. He's still the backup.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Because Ottawa really has no excuse though. Because Devin Levi ended up being a diamond in the rough, and he literally played where the Sens arena is. He played for Carlton Place. And they didn't even show up to one of his single games to watch him. You know what their scouting report was on him? If he was actually good, he would have played in the QMJHL instead of choosing to go to the NCAA. Mm. But Buffalo is laughing now. They could have driven 10 minutes down the road to Carlton Place's arena and just seen this kid completely dominate a terrible league. Even though the league's terrible, he completely dominated it. And Ottawa has no excuse. They just do a bad job with goaltending.
Granted, I don't know. Good training, but nothing else.
Yeah, and I don't know how good Buffalo is at training goalies either. I guess this year will be a test. I mean, actually, I don't even know if Levi's starting. I probably shouldn't say that.
He's still developing, I think.
He's probably going to play half the games this year, though, if I had to guess.
Maybe. Yeah, he started for some last year. He didn't play many, though.
Yeah, he had 20-something starts last year. I could see him getting 40-ish this year.
They do have Luukkonen, who is a really good starter, like, right now. He's developed really well. Buffalo's pretty good in the goaltending category right now.
Well, Buffalo looks good on paper, man, but I don't know what they... Like, they just don't have any finish at all.
I mean, I think that this is the year. I think this is the... Oh, that's a good one, Sam. That's great. Hilarious. Yeah, we need a laugh track on here just for your little quips, man. But I think this is the year for the Sabres. I think they've got it. I think they're knocking Ottawa out of that last wild card spot. It's going to be Montreal and Buffalo this year, guys.
No way. I think there's no way. Ottawa looks way better than Buffalo, man.
No, I know. I don't think Buffalo's got a shot this year. I mean,
how do we feel about Boston? I still think they're race to the basement bottom here, but I don't think they're doing too much.
I'm torn on the Bruins because I look at them and I'm like, yeah, this team is definitely like falling apart and they're definitely like in a rebuilding process. But like, I swear, like, it would not surprise me if this team like somehow manages to sneak into the wild card. Like, I feel like the Bruins are always pretty good. Do you know what I mean? And I think that like, I kind of think back to Montreal under Mark Bergevin, where like they never went into a full rebuild and they just decided to like constantly try and like upgrade every year in free agency and like not really take care through the draft. They would have like one bad year and then they'd be like the 8 seed or the 7 seed and make the playoffs the next year, like mainly because Carey Price was carrying them. But also, I think the Bruins have like solid goaltending. Like, I think the Bruins like Swayman is a solid goaltender that could carry. I mean, if he goes back to the way that he was playing when he won like the when he won the Vezina a couple years ago, correct? Yeah, like I mean, he could carry that team to the playoffs. I think Boston's got some of the best goaltending in the league, and I think goaltending is very important. Pasternak is still a great sniper. I think one of the top 10 goal scorers in the league, honestly. So I wouldn't count them out. I mean, it's easy to because they're so like weak everywhere else. But I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they somehow sneak into the playoffs. And I can see teams like Detroit and Buffalo like slipping up. Even Montreal, I can see them slipping up, and maybe Boston having a decent year and getting.
I actually see Montreal doing pretty good, frankly.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I'm. Like, I'd still be a little nervous on Swayman, I have to say. Last year was pretty abysmal. Yeah. I mean, he missed training camp and whatever, but I don't know. He didn't play well the whole season, which just seemed abnormal. I mean, his team suffered greatly. He also, they were missing some players. Like, fair enough, but yeah. I don't know. If he doesn't bounce back this year, I'd be pretty nervous on him if I was them.
Yeah, no, and that's fair enough. I just don't think that they're like, I don't think Boston's mentality going into this is that they're a bottom feeder. I think that they're going to have the expectation that they make the playoffs, like them as the team. I don't think like analysts really think Boston's going to do anything just compared to the other teams in the Atlantic. And honestly, the Atlantic is one of the toughest divisions, if not the toughest division in the NHL right now. So, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what Boston does. But I don't know. I saw another note that the Leafs are looking at trying to acquire a former Ottawa legend in Erik Karlsson. Like, they're still trying to reach out and get him from Pittsburgh. I haven't really heard much about Erik Karlsson's camp. I haven't heard much about his preseason. Pittsburgh, I feel like, is just in such a odd place right now. It can't be fun to be in that locker room. Like, I feel everyone's in trade rumors. Like, every good player on that team is in trade rumors right now.
So they just signed Arturi Seelofs, whatever.
Oh, yeah, Seelofs is their starting goalie.
He's their starter.
You know
what? Like, I was like, okay, whatever. But I saw all these comments from, like, Pens fans that were super amped about this. And I was like, do you not, like, this guy, like, was exposed as having major, major weaknesses as a goaltender in NHL right away. Yeah. And, like, you can watch, like, I watched a full breakdown of his, like, weakness, but it's essentially low blocker side. Like, he just gives up freebies. Like, I don't know if maybe he's supposedly fixed that, but it was pretty bad. So when he played a couple games and just got annihilated last season. So I don't know. I'd be pretty scared about that one, especially as a starter. Like, I don't know. He has not demonstrated that he was even remotely starter material, in my opinion. But yeah, that's pretty nervous. And then the Erik Karlsson one. I don't even know. I don't know what month like Toronto would be doing with that. That doesn't make any sense.
I feel like it's a weird acquisition for Toronto. Like, I feel like they're just like grasping at straws right now. Like, Erik Karlsson is not going to turn your team into a contender. Like,
I don't know. I saw a quote the other day that I really liked. It said, "The asylum is almost full in Toronto." after hearing bad trade rumor talks, and I was like, "Yeah, that sounds about right."
Yeah, no,
oh
it
my
is
God, that's funny.
Definitely an exciting time. I actually can't wait to see one player I'm really looking forward to seeing is Jonathan Toews coming back and playing for Winnipeg. Now, I'm not excited to see him because I think he's going to be the Jonathan Toews that was captain of the Chicago Blackhawks during those Stanley Cup Finals runs, but he's been out of the league for like 2 years now. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes back and plays because, I mean, I don't know. Do you think he'll be a good addition to the Jets? He's kind of been, like everyone's saying, he's a great addition. I don't know if I'm fully convinced on that. Like, I guess he could bring leadership, but I don't know what his skill level is going to be like. What do you guys think? I think that's a long time for him to be off.
Honestly, I think the Jets right now are such a good team that, honestly, like, I would say that their main thing they do need is leadership because that's clearly the problem. Like, you know, Hellebuyck loses his edge or whatever it is in the playoffs. I don't know what goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the team seem to also have similar problems where they're just not, like, they're just, yeah, they have trouble kind of dealing with the pressure almost. That's what I would say. I mean, that being said, I always say that, Hellebuyck's stats from the regular season are super inflated from, like, how good of a goalie he actually is. Like, he's not that good. Like, Vasilevsky's continuously ranked number one.
Oh, okay. All right.
Every year.
I was going to say, Hellebuyck's pretty good. I mean, like, I guess when you compare him to Vasilevsky and Shesterkin, maybe, like, yeah.
Oh,
you
yeah. Get up but there, I'm saying, but, like, their numbers are worse despite them being better. So, right. Like, he's still, like, his drop-off in performance is so high between regular season and playoffs that it's questionable, yeah.
Yeah. Sam, what do you think about Toews?
Well, it's probably good that he's coming back, and it will likely help, but let's not act like Toews is coming back with the most perfect and elite state of mind.
Yeah.
Winnipeg has a bit of a culture issue, not in the sense they have a bad culture. They just don't really have a winning culture, and I think that's why they fumble the bag in playoffs a lot. Every once in a while, the camera will cut to their bench, and you can see they look really, really beaten down mm-hmm. when things aren't going their way, and that's not something you can have. And obviously, Toews has won the Stanley Cup a few times, so he knows how to get through adversity, but he also did leave for health reasons and mental health reasons.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not going to say that that's a bad thing to do. Not at all. But my point is, as much as he might be able to help guide the team towards developing a better mindset, it would be illogical to assume that he's coming in with the most perfect and pristine mindset that he's ever had.
No.
And granted, going through stuff definitely helps, and it probably does give him a new perspective on life. But I don't think it's going to be as though he's walking in and completely revitalizing the locker room.
Yeah.
He's a great addition to the team, but he will not be carrying the mental weight that is necessary to carry a team on one's shoulders. And someone's got to do it on their team because right now no one's doing it.
Yeah. Well, there's only one way to find out, and that is to watch the NHL. Opening week is this week.